Good morning, and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book study. My name is Dawn B., and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from Southern California. Today's Friday, May 6th, 2022, and this is the 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting. Today we are reading from the Big Book, and we're on page 2, the first paragraph. I took a night law course, ending Constructions of Philosophic Thought Were So Derived. We're going to be commenting and reading that one paragraph only. Today's readers are 12 Steps, Joanne L., 12 Traditions, Brandy M., Reader of the Text, Eileen M., Alice G. will read page 164, and our backup reader is Christina J. The reference number for Thursday, May 5th, is 18,926. That's 18926. And for this morning, May 6th, 7 a.m. Eastern Time meeting, the reference number is 18,930. That's 18930. Our newcomer greeter this morning will be Jody E., and Elaine B. will do the announcements. OA Preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. I'll now ask Joanne L. to read the 12 steps. Good morning, Joanne.
Yes, good morning, everybody. This is Joanne L. from Rhode Island. Thanks, Dawn, for your service today. The 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. 1, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. 4, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being, the exact nature of our wrongs. 6, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9, made direct amends to such people whenever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscience contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. In 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you, and I pass, and have a great weekend. Happy Mother's Day.
Thank you so much, Joanne L. I will now ask Brandy M. to read the 12 steps. Good morning, Brandy.
Good morning, it's Brandy M., recovered compulsive overeater in Alberta, Canada. The 12 traditions. 1, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. 2, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants, they do not govern. 3, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues. Hence, the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. And 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thanks for allowing me to do service.
Thank you so much, Brandy M. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature and then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topics. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you're done sharing, let us know by saying pass. Then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker's should be muted. Today, we resume our study of the Big Book. We're on page 2, the first paragraph. I took a night law course ending constructions of philosophic and thought were so derived, commenting on that one paragraph only. I'll now ask Eileen M. to read and share with us. Good morning, Eileen.
Good morning, Dawn. Thank you so much for your service. This is Eileen M., recovered compulsive overeater in New Hampshire. I took a night law course and obtained employment as investigator for a surety company. The drive for success was on. I'd prove to the world I was important. My work took me about Wall Street, and little by little I became interested in the market. Many people lost money, but some became very rich. Why not I? I studied economics and business as well as law. Potential alcoholic that I was, I nearly failed my law course. At one of the finals, I was too drunk to think or write. Though my drinking was not yet continuous, it disturbed my wife. We had long talks when I would still her forebodings by telling her that men of genius conceive their best projects when drunk, that the most majestic constructions of philosophical thought were so derived. Oh, well, yeah, I really relate to this. I'd prove to the world I was important. And this brings me back to being in college. And, you know, here's the thing is you can appear very successful even while in full-blown addiction. You know, however, that's not a sustainable condition. You know, if you're an addict, it really doesn't last very long. And the addiction catches up with you. And, you know, as we see with Bill, you know, he shows up for the final and he can't even take the final. You know, and I can really relate to that. You know, when I think about college and how this relates, when I was in college, I was smart and I was successful and I depended on my academic success and I thought that was going to fix my problems. And, you know, I wasn't in program yet, so I didn't know that my problems are my own making. I didn't know that. I didn't know that, you know, the way I think and the way I approach life is that causes all my problems. And, you know, I was so good at applying myself to things, and I thought, well, you know, I can do this. I can do anything. And, you know, my life was all about me. It was all about what I was going to do, and, you know, talk about self-centered. I was doing everything on my own power, and I was doing it all for approval. I was trying to get approval from other people, you know, trying to prove that, hey, I'm worthy here, you know. And, I was putting, when I'm looking for approval from other people, I'm basically making them my higher power. And I did not know that until I started doing this process. I had no idea. And, I thought I didn't need God's help. And here's the thing is, you know, I remember when I got to OA, people were telling me, oh, yeah, this is a spiritual program. This is about getting access to power. You know, you're powerless. You're doing the steps to get access to power. That's the whole purpose, you know. And I just didn't even think God was concerned about me. I'm like, you know, I didn't believe it. They were telling me, oh, yeah, you know, you got a higher power that loves you. And I'm like, really? You know, I just wasn't raised that way. I was raised with you don't ask for help. You just kind of approach life on your own. You know, you're on your own now. You're an adult, and you just kind of do it yourself. And, you know, I thought, yeah, well, I'm pretty good at solving problems, so I can do this. And I just never asked for help. You know, I had to get the gift of desperation in order to ask for help. I mean, that was the only way. And, you know, it says in the big book somewhere, I don't know the page, but it says, we are beaten into a state of reasonableness. And that is the truth. That was definitely the truth for me. And, you know, it says sometimes it's a tedious process. It takes a long time. That was my experience. But I'm so grateful now because I have a completely different mindset and approach to life. And I'm so grateful. And thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Eileen M., for getting us started. I'm now going to be opening up the lines to take the names of people who would like to share on this paragraph. Although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your sharing to every third day in order that others might share their experiences too. So who would like to share with us today?
Melinda
from Roz G.
Okay, I heard Roz G, and there was quite a few people there in the beginning. Can you... Can those people please repeat their name slowly?
Darlene
from Nebraska.
Was there a Darlene?
Darcy from Nebraska.
Darcy
M.
Okay. I've got Ross G, Darcy M.
Jarlene G, New York.
Was it Jarlene?
Helen C.
Jonathan.
Okay, I've got Helen C and Jonathan. And Elena? Okay, I've got Roz G. I've got Roz G, Darcy M, Helen C, Jonathan, and Elena N. Did I miss someone? Okay, let's go with that lineup. Roz G, followed by Darcy M. Go ahead, Roz.
Good morning, everybody. My name's Roz, and I'm a compulsive overeater and recovered in Palmdale, California, on my way to work in my car. So I wanted to say about this paragraph is that in my, my 20s and 30s, that early age of discovering who I am, I also persevered. And I think that's common among young people to have the drive to succeed and to become something in life. And there's a movie about Bill W. on Amazon you can watch, and it's wonderful to see that in played out in drama, but that could be an outside issue. So anyway, I want to identify with Bill. So how can I identify with Bill in this area? Well, one of my character defects is fantasizing. Today I really live in reality. But, you know, one of them was fantasizing and living in fantasy. And so I remember I had a meeting with an administrator to go over, my evaluation. And I was sitting in my room, my classroom, fantasizing about a guy I was dating. And I totally forgot about the interview. So she called me and she's like, "Hi, Roz, don't we have an evaluation?" And I felt so humiliated. But you know, Bill was too drunk to show up for his law course, and you know, me being a fantasizer. And it's just the character defect that lies on the bottom of my eating, you know, because when I eat, I get into a euphoric state, and I'm not living in reality and what the reality of things are. So I've messed up work situations through my character defects that lie beneath my eating behaviors, and talked myself out of things that I, you know, that make sense in order to support my disease. So while I, of course, wanted to make something of my life, and I wanted to do well, I was living in a self-centered ego, and me, myself, and I, not thinking about how I'm contributing to life, even in my career. You know, just give me my paycheck, give me the attention and the applause, make me the leader of the organization or the department, and I'm all good. And I have had to go through a lot of painful reprimands, or maybe not the word reprimand, but God, I mean, not through people, but God has shown me through pain through my work situations that doesn't work. And for the past 3 years, I've been abstinent. Thank you. Just to wrap up, I've been abstinent 3 years. I've been humbled a lot, and I have a lot more clout and good reputation on my work. Thank you. I pass.
Thank you, Roz G. from California. Darcy M., please share with us, followed by Helen C. Good morning, Darcy. Press star 1, Darcy.
Sorry about that. This is Darcy M. from Nebraska, compulsive overeater. What this brings up to me is when I finished my business education in college, I did not have a real, I think, extravagant dream. I just wanted to make $12,000 a year, which was $6.25 an hour. But when I came out, to the Black Hills, which I did not follow through and do the evaluation of the area I was going into. So I found out that it was strictly a low paying area. But when I got out here, I also found out that they saw me and they saw that I was a heavyweight, heavy person that immediately took me out of the running for any job that I was looking at that had any benefits or any chance of growth to it or anything. They saw me and they went through the process of everything. They even paid for my, one time when I went for out of town for a job interview, they paid for my mileage and everything, but they looked at me and they saw a heavy person and they just immediately turned me off or took me out of running. So I had the ideas, but, you know, I didn't miss anything important, like a law exam or anything because of my eating, but because of my size, I lost before I even had a chance to start. So I had the same ideas, but they didn't come out that Bill W. had in this paragraph, and I lost a lot because I was heavy. But right now, I think I'm at day 15 of abstinence or something like that, and I'm working on my fourth step, and that's not an easy step to do, and this happened to be what I was reading today, and this one came up, and it's I'm just not doing real hot. I'm hanging in there, but I'm going to make it. I know I will, because this is the only way I'm going to do it. So I think I'll close with this and I'll pass. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Darcy M., for sharing with us from Nebraska. Helen C., please share with us now, followed by Jonathan. Good morning, Helen.
Good morning. My name is Helen C., and I'm a compulsive overeater from Northern California. Grateful to be on this meeting and grateful to be in a meeting that is hyper-focused on the literature, because I know that's where the answers are for me as a compulsive eater trying to come back from relapse. So I appreciate this meeting, and I really relate to this paragraph because Bill W. obviously was smart, capable, had a lot of gifts and talents, and was sabotaging himself with his food. I mean, with his alcohol addiction. And for me, my aspirations when I was younger was to be an actress, and I fulfilled those aspirations. I moved to Los Angeles, and I, you know, had a, you know, I worked as an actor, and I let go of that career 20 years ago because I quit smoking and started to gain a lot of weight. I gained like 50 pounds. And, you know, a series of things happened, and I just kind of walked away from that career, but I certainly didn't want to be in front of the camera at that weight. And it contributed to me withdrawing from my life and into the food. And I also relate to this paragraph because for me, what food has been about, my problem is that I don't know how to deal with life. I don't, and food kept me anesthetized and fooled me into thinking, because I was in such isolation when I eat, you know, and in this relapse, of course, I've been in isolation, and that isolation and trying to manage and control my life, and for me, it was keeping my life small. That's what felt good to me and safe, even though I had these aspirations of getting a regular on a series and you know, the fame and fortune that comes with an acting career. But I lived this dichotomous life of just being in my apartment and eating, and then I'd show up on set and, you know, do my thing and then go back to this life. And I remember just feeling incredibly unlovable. And I always thought, if someone could see how I really live my life, you know, I just felt that it rendered me unlovable. And then, of course, I came into program and found all of you that suffered from the same disease. And it comforts me to know that there's people out there that have, and this group in particular, that have put down the food
time
and are living expansive lives. And so I think I'll end with that. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Helen C. from California. Jonathan, will you share with us now and give me your initial of your last name and where you're calling from? And then we'll have Alana N. share. I want to remind everyone, if you're just joining us, we are on page 2, the first paragraph. I took a night law course, ending constructions of philosophic thought were so derived. We're commenting on that one paragraph only today. So Jonathan, go ahead and share with us, please. Press star 1, Jonathan.
Hi, I'm Jonathan G. from Dobbs Ferry, New York. I've been abstinent just over 6 months after a 20-year relapse. When I read this, I see the power of rationalization. You know, his wife says, "Hey, honey, I'm worried about your drinking here. It's screwing us up." And he says, "Oh, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. Great men always drink. They get together and drink, and that's how the world changes, right?" And that power of rationalization. Well, overeating, I don't think anybody ever changed the world overeating. But it was socially okay. I could eat with my friends. I could eat at certain times of the year. But as the disease progressed, I found myself eating alone. And this tells me something about the progressive nature of my disease, and also about the power of rationalization. And I can fall prey to those things, I suppose, at any time. And I'm so glad to have this program and to live in recovery and be recovered. It is a joy to be part of this group, and I'm so glad we're here this morning. With that, I pass.
Thank you so much, Jonathan G. from New York. Now, Elena N., will you share with us? And then I'll be opening up the line to take more names. Good morning, Elena. Press star one, Elena.
Hello, my name's Elena A. I'm a compulsive eater from near Toronto. Sorry, I can hear that my echo in the thing, so someone might be unmuted. Thank you. So I can relate to this. I'm 30 years old, so I'm kind of still I'm still young, and I recently, you know, a few years ago went to college, and the phrase, I proved to the world I was important, and, you know, some people became very rich, really apply to me, because I went to film school and went to college for film, and I wanted to be a director or an actor or a stunt driver or something. And I still want to be in film, but my bigger sort of ambition sort of fell through, and I was going to school, but I was binging all the time. Like I would go to the cafe to get drinks and stuff at like every break during college or my classes. And I thought I was hiding my weight and I was hiding my eating from other people, but they probably noticed. I basically became obsessed with food in college. I just kind of like focused on it all day. It was like the first thing I did in the morning. It was what I did during break. It's what I did before class. It's what I did during the break at class. It's what I did after class. It's what I did at lunch. It's what I did before the next class or halfway through the next class. And I would get the same things over and over again. And it was my way of getting through the day. And I even had a relationship with a really nice young woman for a few months, and I treated her really poorly. And part of it was because I was an addict, and I wasn't dealing with my problems. I wasn't becoming a better person. I was just eating all the time and not communicating with her. So ambitions were kind of no avail when it came to the food. The food pulled down my dreams on my head, and now I'm just barely getting myself back to even just state of being able to work for minimum wage. I can also relate to the majestic constructions of philosophical thought. I used to be friends with a very, very productive alcoholic, someone who is very charismatic, very likable, very funny, very talented, very physically capable. And I am often, when I think of him, I often get annoyed or mad because I'm like, why am I not this genius alcoholic? Why am I not this genius food addict? Why am I not this person who can get high on something and can produce, you know, amazing things with it? Why do I have to be one of those people who can't produce anything when they're in their food? So I can just relate to having really big dreams, really big thoughts, really big desires and big wants out of life, but living in such a small way that continues to get smaller and continues to go lower and lower. That's all I have to say. Thank you very much.
Dawn, star one to unmute.
Oh, sorry about that. I'm now going to be opening up the lines to take the names of people who would like to share on this paragraph. We are on page 2, the first paragraph. I took a night law course ending with constructions of philosophic thought were so derived. So if you, although we do value your experience, we ask that you limit your sharing to every third day in order that others might share their experience too. So who would like to share with us on this paragraph?
Sherry KB.
Chrissy
M. Sherry KB.
Chrissy M.
Chrissy M.
Beth V.
Audrey MP.
Beth V.
Bruce E.
Deborah G.
Audrey
MP. Okay, let me tell you who I have. I have Sherry KB, Chrissy M, Beth V, Audrey MP,
Jim E.
And Jim E. And let's stop there. Okay, I have Sherry KB, Chrissy M, Beth V, Audrey MP, Jim E. Go ahead, Sherry KB, please share with us. Star one, Sherry KB.
Can you hear me, Dawn? Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you, Sherry.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Thanks. Good morning. This is Sherry KB in Northern California. Very grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater. Thanks so much for your service, Dawn. And sorry, Team Friday and everyone on the line. Welcome, newcomers. You know, I'm just going to jump in here and talk about from the point of Bill, and then I'm going to go into my own thing here. What I noticed, you know, is in these first two paragraphs on this page, and I know we're on paragraph one, there are like 10 I's in this, and this is all about, you know, the alcoholic behavior, the alcoholic thinking. You know, it's like it's showing me how, you know, alcohol altered Bill's path in life and food altered mine. You know, when it says here that I'd prove to the world that I was important, because, you know, deep down inside, I never thought I was enough. So I kept having to try to prove myself, not only to you, but to myself. And it never worked in that way, because I used food for courage. And, you know, thinking about this, you know, God's not in here at all. It's all in the eyes. And that's how I was for so many years. I never thought of bringing God into that situation in all my life until I got into 12-step programs. And then even then, until I started, you know, going through the big book, I never thought about inviting God in to help me with things, to help me with in my entire life. You know, like today I know that God is everything, or God isn't. What's my choice to be? And my life is so much better bringing my higher power into it. And when it talks here about, you know, that he conceived his best ideas or projects when drunk, I've got the word taxes by here with peanut M&Ms, because that's how I did taxes in our business. I use food for courage throughout my entire life. If I did an inventory on that, it would show that every time something I had to do or show up for, food was always used to have courage to deal in the world. And I would have never thought that had I not done a four-step, several four-steps, actually. And that just blows my mind, because I would have never copped up to that, ever. But that's what I did, you know, from day one. And God was nowhere to be found. It was the Sherry Show, a.k.a. whatever you want to call it. And that's what happened. And when forebodings here, you know, thoughts of, you know, bad thoughts of things to come, and you know what, that's what happened with me with my life due to using the food. You know, my life would have been probably totally different had I not been in the food. But it got me here, and I'm grateful, and my life is so much better ever since. And I don't know. I hope you're still there, Dawn. I'm going to go ahead and mute. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Sherry KB from California. Chrissy M., will you share with us now, followed by Beth V.? Good morning, Chrissy.
Yeah, good morning. This is Chrissy M., grateful, recovering, bulimic, anorexic, and compulsive overeater from Oregon. And when I think about this paragraph, I think one of the things that sticks out to me about being in my disease is really this like focus on my external life when my inside life was a mess. You know, I had to get all the degrees. I got my BA, my master's, my PhD. And, you know, part of my manifestation of my eating disorder was really a hyper-focus on what people saw on the outside. Even though inside I was a total mess, you know, my relationships inside were a mess, but what mattered to me and how I was defining my success was really very external and not really, so like my internal life was not a focus. I didn't really see a need to focus on that. You know, like going to be a lawyer, going through the bar exam, having these big, you know, ideas. And I was just really preoccupied with what I look like on the outside and how others perceive me. And I was so fixated on that, that I even just think about how much that took me away from my family, my relationships. And I think I still struggle with that, like, overachiever piece and what I can handle. And in terms of, like, this sobriety, sometimes it's hard in terms of AA to think, well, being drunk, you know, you're inebriated, and of course you can't take a test. And I think for me, the how that equates is just, like, my emotional sobriety. When I am not abstinent and I am in my full-blown eating disorder, like, my emotional and thought life is a total train wreck. Like, my thoughts are obsessive, like I'm spiraling on things, and I may be physically there, but like my mind is not. And that to me is usually one of the signs that I need to go to a meeting and that, you know, I'm starting to get back into my disease. Like the food and the eating, like that is like secondary to what happens inside of me emotionally and spiritually when I start to unravel. You know, and I think in terms of like even at my work where I've, you know, outwardly achieved a certain level and like I may have somebody who made a comment to me or I may have gotten an email and like I haven't slept because of that and I'm like obsessing on it and I'm so preoccupied in my head and my thought life and kind of this obsessive thinking that I'm not really engaged in what's happening. And you know, I can just think of these moments where, you know, my son is like, Mom, 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 and saying my name over and over. And I'm like, what? And it's because I'm so in my head in this different world about something that happened or something somebody said. So, like, for me, I may not be like, you know, drunk or high, but when I am in my disease, like, my mind is not there. Like, my mind is not sober. My spirit is not sober. Okay. I cannot think straight. Thank you. I'll wrap up. So I just think the lesson for me is like shifting in recovery from this focus on outward to like what's happening inside with my spirit and my emotional life and keeping that healthy. And with that, I'll pass.
Thank you, Chrissy M. from Oregon. Beth V., will you share with us, followed by Audrey M.P. Good morning, Beth.
Good morning. Thank you so much for being here. I am Beth V, as in Victor, from Pennsylvania, gratefully recovered. This is another important paragraph for me, and the words are strong. The drive for success was on. I proved to the world I was important. And what I heard was ego and me and what I wanted. And my earliest ideas of success were to blame my childhood family for all the things that were wrong with me. And so I rejected them. And I left home young and I married early. But unfortunately, I took myself along into this new family and marriage. And I took myself and my addictions with me. And so my failures continued to grow, and I did make quite a mess of all that. But I must look at my earliest years in order to understand myself today. And the most important part is that I relate in I relate to what Bill's saying about his high aspirations. And I also hear loud and clear, you know, that somehow, you know, I got through my life. I don't know how that I'm still here today, but my higher power was with me. Some higher power was with me and has protected me all throughout my life. And here I am. It took me a long time to understand my addictions and to study them in program. And this, you know, this idea of ego, it's still with me today, and I have never lost it. But I have come a long way through studying program in watching my ego today. And I used to feed my ego and the buildup of emotions with food, and food was my master. And I turned to food for comfort, and I turned to external outside sources to get comfort in my life. I did that from the time I was a kid, and I still want to do that today. The main difference being that food is no longer my higher power, and I no longer seek comfort from food. When I have a buildup of emotion today, I use the steps. If I feel someone's hurt me and I don't feel important anymore, I turn to higher power to fill that hole in myself. And that has been the solution today for me. And also to the newcomers, I would say this. We have to find a new way of being. I thank you very much for this program, everyone on the line. And with that, I will pass.
Thank you so much, Beth V. from Pennsylvania. Audrey M.P., will you share with us now, followed by Jim E. Good morning, Audrey.
Good morning, Dawn. Good morning, Team Friday, and welcome to all the newcomers and people returning. This is Audrey M.P. I'm calling from Southern California. I'm a grateful, recovering, compulsive overeater. And I'm so quickly on the road to being recovered, which feels like ego already to say I'm recovered. I've been doing this a long time, but with the beauty and the grace and the accessibility to this particular group vision, I'm so grateful, and it's been encouraged for me to share more often. I think because I can't see any of you that I can't be heard. And it always feels awkward, you know, speaking to, you know, an electronic device and not seeing faces. But, you know, in my recovery and with this paragraph in mind, I've never had an ego about my education because I never finished. I am 64 years old. I'm in university now. And I transferred 7 transcripts into college. And I'm trying to get a degree because I've been blessed with entrepreneurism most of my career, a big chunk of my career. And, you know, I'm not ready, and I was injured. I'm not ready to go to work, and I'm not ready to retire, and I can't just rely on the resources that I have. I trust God, but I need to be smart about my resources and what I can do to help God help me in my willingness to earn and be self-supporting. I live alone, so I don't have a wife or a husband you know, bounce things off of me when I'm in my disease. I'm alone. And I think that some of my thinking, you know, when I was an entrepreneur and I was on call and, you know, I didn't have a schedule and I couldn't plan, you know, couldn't plan my meals. I didn't know where I was going to be in the next couple hours because I was too busy. And people in program used to say, you know, if you give it to God, God will provide the time. And I never believed them, you know. I just never believed that I could pack a lunch for 3 days and eat in my car with Trader Joe's, 5 of them around every corner. I could just Oh, so the old behavior, that's why I say I've been around for a really long time. I celebrated.
Time.
Thank you. I pass.
Thank you so much, Audrey M.P. from California. Jim E., will you share with us now, please? Let us know where you're calling from.
Hey, I'm Jim E. from Vancouver Island, B.C. Thanks very much for the meeting. I'm really grateful to be on the meeting. I often struggle to get going in the morning. I wake up and I'm feeling this sort of dread. And I'm just really grateful to be on the meeting and to feel connected to my higher power and to my fellows. So when I look at this paragraph, a couple things struck me. Overall, in Bill's story, one thing when I read it, especially if I was to read the whole chapter in one sitting, the big thing that sticks out to me is one of the big things that sticks out to me is the progression, the unmanageability, and the idea that whatever just happened, okay, sure, that was bad, but I'm going to get it together. This time, my plan's going to work. And I'm gonna keep my stuff together this time. And so this is really the first thing that specific thing that's mentioned is this exam. At the end of that chapter, the most majestic constructions of philosophic thought were so derived. Like, this is a guy. This is a grandiose guy at this point. I mean, I don't know if there's a more grandiose way to say that. Most majestic constructions of philosophic thought were so derived. And it's striking on page 8, if you were to fast forward to page 8, where he talks about bitter morass of self-pity. I had been overwhelmed. Alcohol was my master. That's 6 pages from now. This is a... to go from this guy basically telling his wife, this is what geniuses do and everything's fine, to that bitter morass of self-pity. And later basically accepting the idea he's going to die. Striking, right? And so for me, I can very much relate to the progression where I reached a point with my eating. Where the things I've lost large amounts of weight numerous times. It didn't matter because the problem wasn't my weight. The problem was my thinking and inside how unbearable life felt when I wasn't compulsively eating. Thank you. So I'm very grateful for the steps and the meeting, and I pass.
Thank you so much, Jim E. We'll now close with a reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. Will Alice G. please read A Vision for You? Our book is meant to be suggestive only. Good morning, Alice.
Good morning. Thank you for leading us today. Alice G., recovered compulsive overeater in Wisconsin. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order, but obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is a great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.